I can remember very vividly where we left off yesterday evening. Vritrasura made his very fierce appearance. Remember? There's a picture. Yeah, there he is. Ooh. Big trident. So big it was carrying the three worlds. Red beard, red mustache, red hair. Big, big mouth, so big. When he would yawn, it looked like he was swallowing all the stars in the sky. Vritrasura. So the demigods armed themselves, threw all of their weapons all at once at Vritrasura. He opened his big mouth and swallowed all the weapons. Yeah, they weren't laughing at all. They became very discouraged. Very discouraged. And what does somebody like the demigods, even the demigods, they're mixed in their devotion, but they know no other shelter but Lord Vishnu, even for the fulfillment of their material desire. So immediately they turned their attention to the Supreme Lord and started offering prayers. So I'm going to read just verbatim what they said. The three worlds are created by the five elements: ether, air, fire, water, and earth, which are controlled by various demigods, beginning from Lord Brahma. Being very much afraid of the time factor, which will end our existence. Now we read akutobhayam. This process of bhakti is capable of freeing one from fear, but the demigods, they have fear. Because they're identifying with their bodies, they will lose their bodies. So they're very much afraid. The time factor himself, however, is afraid of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, let us now worship that Supreme Lord, who alone can give us protection. The theme of this chapter. They want a particular kind of protection. Protection from losing their bodies, which it's inevitable, today or tomorrow. And protection so they can get the kingdom back, which they get. But it's a very limited kind of protection. You'll see how the Supreme Lord responds to their prayers. Very interesting. Free from all material conceptions of existence and never wonderstruck by anything, the Lord is always jubilant and fully satisfied by his own spiritual perfection. He has no material designations, and therefore he is steady and unaffected. That Supreme Personality of Godhead is the only shelter of everyone, including of Vritrasura. Anyone desiring to be protected by others is certainly a great fool who desires to cross the sea by holding the tail of a dog. Nice example. It's in the chapter summary at the very beginning also. Prabhupada liked it so much. In the purport, Prabhupada explains, a dog can also swim. But because you can see a dog can swim, and you desire to cross the ocean, so there's a dog swimming in the ocean, you grab onto his tail with the hope that you can cross the ocean holding onto the dog's tail. Very foolish. Therefore, the demigods represent taking shelter of anyone else for protection besides the Supreme Lord. Is that foolish? It's just as foolish as holding on to a dog's tail to cross the ocean. Then they give some nice examples. The Manu, named King Satyavrata, formerly saved himself by tying the small boat of this entire world to the horn of the Matsya Avatar, the fish incarnation. By the grace of the Matsya Avatar, Manu saved himself from the great danger of the flood. May that same fish incarnation save us today from the great and fearful danger caused by the son of Tvashtha. Now here's another example. We know the Matsya incarnation. This next one is less familiar. In the beginning of creation, a tremendous wind caused fierce waves of inundating water. The great waves made such a horrible sound. Just the sound of the waves was so horrible that Brahma almost fell off of his seat on the lotus into the water of devastation just from the sound of the waves, before there was even anything. Just Brahma and Lord Vishnu and the lotus flower and the ocean in which Lord Vishnu was lying. Thus, we also expect the Lord to protect us from this dangerous condition. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who created us by His external potency and by whose mercy we expand the creation of the universe, is always situated before us as the Supersoul, but we cannot see His form. Much like the earlier chapter, the Hamsa Guhya prayers, it's describing the same Lord within, and then He appears before Daksha. Same, He appears before the demigods coming up. We are unable to see Him because all of us think that we are separate and independent gods. By His inconceivable internal potency, the Supreme Personality of Godhead expands into various transcendental bodies, such as Vamana Dev, the incarnation of strength among the demigods, Parashuram, the incarnation among saints, Nisringadev and Varaha, incarnations among the animals, Matsya and Kurma, incarnations among aquatics. He accepts various transcendental bodies among all types of living entities and among human beings. He especially appears as Lord Krishna and Lord Ram. By His causeless mercy, He protects the demigods who are always harassed by the demons. And don't forget, we're demigods who are being harassed by the demons. He's invoking this. You have so many potencies, and especially this one over here. He is the supreme cause, represented as the male and female creative energies. I'll discuss that a little bit from the purport. Although different from this universe, he exists in his universal form, Virat Rupa. In our fearful condition, let us take shelter of him, for we are sure that the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Soul, will give us his protection. Now when Lord Vishnu appears and speaks, he reminds them, if you know that he'll for sure give you protection, why are you asking for protection? Why are you asking for anything? Just ask for pure devotional service. And one who comes before the Lord asking for pure devotional service, will he not protect him? But they don't have the mentality. They have the mentality of, I want, I want, I want. You are this, and you are this, and you are this, and I want. So there's a different kind of protection. Not the protection that was spoken about in the first chapter. So in the glorification, and what Prabhupada spends the entire purport discussing, is this statement, he is the supreme cause represented as the male and female creative energies. So the female creative energy is Prakriti. And Prabhupada is explaining in the purport that the male creative energy is Purusha, meaning the living entity, the imitation male, the imitation enjoyer of Prakriti. Like the verse from Bhagavad Gita, Purusha Prakriti Stohi Bhunkte Prakriti Jan Gunan. You know that one, Slokaraj? No? You? That's how it ends. Do the whole verse.
Purusha Prakriti Stohi Bhunkte Prakriti Jan Gunan Karanam Guna Sangasya Sadasad Yonishu Janmashu.
Sadasad Yoni Janmashu. So this is in the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna is explaining how the living entity becomes conditioned. Living entity becomes conditioned. And if you understand how the living entity becomes conditioned, you can understand how the living entity becomes unconditioned. If you understand how you got in this room, you can understand how to get out of this room. So, the living entity takes the first essential requirement to be a conditioned soul is to try to enjoy Krishna's energies, although you're not entitled to. You become imitation Purusha. Purusha Prakritistho He. Purusha Prakritistho He. So, trying to enjoy matter, one becomes conditioned by that matter. One considers oneself to be the cause, the karta, the karanam, the doer and the cause of activity. When in fact everything is being carried out by Prakriti. So for material activity, Krishna explains this in the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, both are necessary for activity. You need material nature and you need a living entity who tries to enjoy material nature. Then you can have material activities. If you just have spirit souls with no material nature, just material nature without spirit souls, or material nature without an enjoying spirit, if you just have material nature without living entities in an enjoying spirit, what happens? You don't have material activities. You may have spiritual activity, but you don't have material activities. So in this material world, there's the demigods are saying there's two creative two creative energies, a living entity, male and female. They're both, in one sense, they're both female. Living entities are also prakriti. Living entities are also prakriti. So we're also female, but in the imitation male position called creative male energies. The combination of these two makes the material world, and Krishna is above them both. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate iti matva ajan iti matva. Vasudev, O original person, O most exalted person, supreme experience, welfare personified, O supreme benediction. They're really buttering him up, huh? Supremely merciful and changeless, O support of the cosmic manifestation, sole proprietor of all planetary systems, master of everything, and husband of the goddess of fortune. Your lordship is realized by the topmost sannyasis who wander about the world to preach Krishna consciousness, fully absorbed in samadhi through bhakti yoga. Because their minds are concentrated upon you, they can receive the conception of your personality in their fully purified hearts. When the darkness in their hearts is completely eradicated and you are revealed to them, the transcendental bliss they enjoy is the transcendental form of your lordship. No one but such persons can realize you. In other words, we see your form, but we're not on that platform. That's what they're saying. We have this big time favor to ask you, namely, take care of that horrible demon. Your position is difficult to understand. We cannot understand your position. Right here, I'll read this one. The ordinary conditioned soul is subject to the material laws, like us, the demigods. And he thus receives the fruits of his actions, like we're just receiving. Does your lordship, like an ordinary human being, exist within this material world in a body produced by the material modes? No. Do you enjoy or suffer the good or bad results of actions under the influence of time, past work, and so forth? No. Or, on the contrary, are you present here only as a neutral witness who is self-sufficient, free from all material desires, and always full of spiritual potency? Yes. We certainly cannot understand your actual position. That's true. Okay, so now more glorification. A rope causes fear for a bewildered person who considers it to be a snake. But not a person with proper intelligence who knows it to be only a rope. Similarly, you are the super soul in everyone's heart, inspire fear or fearlessness according to one's intelligence. And we're very much afraid. But for you, there's no duality. Anyway, therefore, O killer of the Madhu demon, incessant transcendental bliss flows in the minds of those who have even once tasted but a drop of the nectar from the ocean of your glories. So that's alluding back to something in the beginning part of the chapter, the beginning part of the canto. Such exalted devotees forget the tiny reflection of so-called material happiness produced from the material senses of sight and sound. Anyway. So here's the punchline. Well, it comes twice. Everything and everyone including human beings and even daitya demons and the danavas, is but an expansion of your energy, O Supremely Powerful One. You have always appeared in your forms as the various incarnations to punish the demons like that guy. As soon as they become very powerful, and he's really powerful, you appear as Lord Vamana, Lord Rama, Lord Krishna. You appear sometimes as an animal like Lord Boar, sometimes mixed incarnation, Lord Nisringadeva, Lord Hayagriva, and sometimes an aquatic like Lord Fish, Lord Tortoise, assuming such various forms. You have always punished the demons and danavas. We therefore pray that your lordship appear today as another incarnation, if you so desire, to kill the great demon Vritrasura. O Supreme Protector, O Grandfather, O Supreme Pure, O Lord, we are all surrendered souls at your lotus feet. Indeed, our minds are bound to your lotus feet in meditation by chains of love. Now, please, manifest your incarnation, accepting us as your own eternal servants and devotees. Be pleased with us and be sympathetic towards us. Your love-filled glance with its cool and pleasing smile of sympathy, and by the sweet nectarian words emanating from your beautiful mouth, free us from the anxiety caused by this Vritrasura, who pains us to the core of our hearts. More glorifications. Your lotus feet are the only shelter of the fully surrendered devotees. Therefore, O Supreme Controller, please annihilate this dangerous demon Vritrasura, Tushta's son, who has already swallowed all our weapons, our paraphernalia for fighting, and our strength and influence, etc. They're pretty clear about what they want and how quickly they want it to happen. Shukadeva Goswami continued narrating, when the demigods offered the Lord their sincere prayers in this way, the Lord listened by his causeless mercy. Being pleased, he then replied to the demigods. Listen to his reply. He's pretty direct too. Oh, beloved demigods, you have offered prayers to me with great knowledge, and I am certainly most pleased with you. A person is liberated by such knowledge, and thus he remembers my exalted position, which is above the conditions of material life. Such a devotee is fully purified by offering prayers in full knowledge. This is the source of devotional service to me. O best of the intelligent demigods, although it is true that nothing is difficult for one to obtain when I am pleased with him, a pure devotee whose mind is exclusively fixed upon me does not ask for anything but the opportunity to engage in devotional service. Hint: I know what your minds are fixed upon, and it's not that your minds are fixed upon me. Otherwise you wouldn't do these horrible things to Vishwarup and to Brihaspati and all these things that continuously get yourselves in trouble. So I know where your minds are at just by hearing your eloquent prayers. Though you're very learned, you're not pure in devotion. So this is echoing the message going back to the first section. Pure devotion can eradicate such tendency, agham dhunvanti karchnyena. Such purity of devotion, even a glimpse of such purity of devotion, which the demigods don't know. They're not aspiring for that, although they recognize that it exists, and they say, well, there's another group of people besides us that have it. So the Lord is acknowledging, yes, you don't have it. But how we should, in our reading of the Bhagavatam, what we should understand is the different grades of devotion and the grade of devotion that we should be personally cultivating. Even though we may be more like the demigods than those exalted sannyasis they're describing, it's not that we need to aspire for sannyas, we need to aspire for the consciousness that the Lord is indicating, one whose mind is exclusively fixed upon me, mayi chananya yogina bhaktir avya vicharini. Anybody know that verse from Bhagavad Gita? Mayi chananya yogina bhaktir avya vicharini. You forgot. Satyavrata? Saiju? No. Your brother on. Give him the microphone. That's that. Mayi chananya yogina bhaktir avya vicharini. That's pretty good. That's good. This is from the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna is describing the items of knowledge. Do you know that verse? Chapter 13, text 8 through 12. In the first paragraph of the purport, Prabhupada explains that for knowledge, the two most important things in knowledge are these two. Mayi, don't put your fingers in your mouth. Yuck. Muchi. Okay? No more. Mayi, chananya yogena, bhaktir, avyabhicharini. Where one's exclusive shelter is the personality of Godhead. And how does one access that position? What is a prerequisite, simultaneous, parallel factor that must be there also? I know that you know. Huh? Acharya Upasana. Acharya Upasana. Isn't it interesting? It's the same couplet that's being described here in the first chapter of 6th Canto Srimad Bhagavatam. Vasudeva Parayana, and taking shelter of such a person. So that one's consciousness is completely absorbed in the Supreme through the agency and mercy of the representative. Acharya Upasana. So, the demigods don't have that. And even their spiritual master, one they've ignored, the other they've killed. They don't have that. Acharya Upasana. So they don't have Mayi Chananya Yogena Bhakti Ravya Vicharini. They don't have it. They don't have Amanadvama Dandvatvam either. They don't have humility and pridelessness. So they have a bunch of material desires. They're replete with material desires. Yet they have strong faith in the Supreme Lord. And so he carries on. Those who think that material assets to be everything or to be the ultimate goal of life are called kripanas. They do not know the ultimate necessity of the soul. Moreover, if one awards that which is desired by such fools, he must also be considered foolish. So what is it? The demigods not only want Vritrasura out of the way, they want their kingdom. They want to save their bodies and they want their kingdom. So he's saying in a nice way, you're crippling us. He's just saying those people who are like this, that's them. They're crippling us. and I'm not going to make the same mistake of just giving you what you want, because to do so would be just foolish. In the purport, Prabhupada refers to one verse in Madhya Lila. It's a verse where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is instructing Sanatana Goswami, chapter 22, Madhya Lila. And the verse that's repeated here in the purport is Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami's representation of the prayers of the demigods, prayers of the residents of Jambudweep to the Supreme Lord. So it's 5th canto, chapter 17, something like that. They say that they're offering prayers to various personalities, very praiseworthy personalities. And this one is great in this way, this one is great, this one is great in this way, this one is great. And then they come to the Supreme Lord Vishnu and says, he's the greatest of all. Because when he's approached by people for something material, he doesn't give it to them. Rather, he gives them his two lotus feet. If he does give them something, he does in that way. Like Dhruva Maharaj approached for a big kingdom. So instead he got the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, as well as the kingdom. So the statement by Krishnadas, he's restating the Lord's contemplation of this prayer to him. Since I am very intelligent, why should I give this fool material prosperity? Instead, I shall induce him to take the nectar of the shelter of my lotus feet and make him forget illusory material enjoyment. Quote. But then Prabhupada explains, if one sincerely prays to God for material possessions in exchange for devotional service, the Lord is not foolish like such an unintelligent devotee. He shows him special favor by taking away whatever material possessions he has and gradually giving him the intelligence to be satisfied only by rendering service to his lotus feet. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments in this regard that if a foolish child requests his mother to give him poison, the mother, being intelligent, will ordinarily not give him poison, even though he requests it. A materialist does not know that to accept material possessions means to accept poison or the repetition of birth and death. An intelligent person, a brahmana, aspires for liberation from material bondage. That is the real self-interest of a human being. We're almost done. So then Lord Vishnu gives an example of a physician. A good physician, knowing the physical condition of a patient, will never recommend for the patient to do something or eat something that's going to aggravate their disease. A good physician isn't going to do that. Oh, you like such and such, it's horrible for you, but go ahead and take a little bit. They're not going to do that. A good physician, no, don't do that. Refrain from this and do that instead. They'll give them a diet and prohibitions. So having said that, and knowing very well what the demigods want, here's Lord Vishnu's solution to their problem. Indra, all good fortune unto you. I advise you to approach the exalted sage Dadichi. He has become very accomplished in knowledge, vows, and austerities, and his body is very strong. Go and ask him for his body without delay. That saintly Dadichi personally assimilated the spiritual science and then delivered it to the Ashwini Kumaras. It is said that Dadichi gave them mantras through the head of a horse. Therefore, the mantras are called Ashvashira. Therefore, obtaining the mantras of spiritual science from Dadichi, the Ashwini Kumaras became Jivanmukta, or liberated even in this life. And so, in the purport, there's a very long narration in Sanskrit that's just summarized by Srila Prabhupada in this way. So Dadichi was a muni who had spiritual knowledge. He had ample material knowledge, but he also had spiritual knowledge. And while he was engaged in a particular yajna, the Ashwini Kumaras came to him. You know who the Ashwini Kumaras are? And what do they do, Ashwini Kumaras? What are they known for? Don't know. The Ashwini Kumaras? Well, the royal physician. They're physicians. They're very knowledgeable in the science of medicine. They're as Narada is the rishi for spiritual knowledge for the devas. Devarshi Narada, he's called. So Ashwini Kumaras, they're physicians. And because of their position as physicians, Indra is very vigilant to make sure they don't, because he's so envious, Indra. He doesn't want them to come up. He's always trying to cut them off. One other place besides here that the Ashwini Kumaras appear is in the description of the marriage between Sukanya and Chavanamuni in the beginning of the 8th canto. Chavanamuni, well, it's a long story. I'm not going to narrate the whole story. But an arrangement is made where he marries the daughter of a king, her name is Sukanya, and she is like a granddaughter in age. He's very, very old and very grumpy. Old, grumpy, grouchy guy. Married to a very, very young and very chaste wife. So, because she has very, very good quality, she knows just what to do. There's detailed description, but she anticipates the mood of her husband and simply served according to the mood of her husband. And he became so appreciative of his wife's, although the age of a granddaughter, his wife's service, that his grouchiness subsided. Grumpy, grouchy guy became a peaceful, quiet, mellow guy. Controlled by her service. Of course, he wasn't an exploitative person. He was, because someone could try to take advantage of such a submissive wife. He didn't. He just was very pleased with her. And he became pacified. So then he desired very much to please her, which is a natural reciprocation for one who receives very loving service. He wanted to serve her. So he got the idea, if I could get my youth back, then I could please my wife. So his hermitage was visited once by the Ashwini Kumaras. Since they're very expert in the science of medicine, basically he said, let's make a deal. The deal is, you give me back my youth, and I'll give you some soma rasa, because Indra doesn't let you get any. I know the yajna. I'll do the yajna and give you some soma rasa. We just won't tell Indra. And you give me back my youth. So they said, it's a deal. Let's sign a contract. So they made a deal. They gave him back his youth. He did the yajna. They got soma rasa. And then Indra became very envious, and he wanted to punish Chavana Muni. So he raised his arm with his thunderbolts ready to dash and destroy Chavana Muni. But Chavana Muni was so powerful, Indra couldn't move his arm. And the Ashvani Kumaras, they went back to the heavenly regions, having tasted the, taken the soma rasa provided for them by Chavana Muni. So here in this story, they want spiritual knowledge, not just material knowledge of how to make people young and how to heal this and that. They wanted spiritual knowledge. And they knew that Dadichi had spiritual knowledge and that he was very merciful. So Dadichi said, I'm right now involved in a yajna. You're going to have to come back when I'm done, but come back and I give you my word. I will teach you spiritual knowledge. So they were very happy. They obliged and they went away. And then when they went away, Indra, with his many eyes and many ears, he heard about this, and so he went to Dadichi and said, my dear Muni, Dadichi, these Ashvani Kumaras, they're royal physicians. They're not entitled to the spiritual knowledge. So my request to you, I'm the King of Heaven, I'm making this request, please, do not teach them spiritual knowledge. And if you fail to fulfill my request, I'll cut off your head. Indra just doesn't learn, does he? This is a brahmana. This is Dadichi Muni. He's going to kill him if he does what he's supposed to do, teach spiritual knowledge. So Indra went away. Dadichi finished his yajna, and the Ashvani Kumaras came. Okay, we're ready for spiritual knowledge. Dadichi said, well, a little problem while you were gone. Indra came, and you know what he said? They said, yeah, we heard that Indra said that, so we already have a solution. We're royal physicians. We know how to take care of this problem. We'll remove your head, give you a horse's head, and then you can speak knowledge to us through the horse's head. And then when Indra comes and cuts off the horse's head, we'll give you back your original head. Yeah. And we just want to remind you that you promised us, and a Brahmin must keep his word of honor. But you have nothing to worry about. This material knowledge we already have, but we want spiritual knowledge. So the Dadichi, being very liberal, okay, cut off my head, put on a horse's head, I'll teach you the knowledge, and we don't have to wait very long, Indra will come. He said, yeah, we'll just be in the background somewhere. After Indra goes away, having cut off your horse's head, we'll put on your other head. Dadichi Muni. So Lord Vishnu recommends to the devas, you go to Dadichi Muni and you ask him for his body. And then he gives more to the plan, what to do when that happens. So continued tomorrow, the story of Dadichi Muni being approached by the devas. And how he responds. He responds in a funny way. You'll see. Okay, so any discussion? Oh, and yeah, here, this ends chapter 9. Yeah, his instruction says he will give you his body, and after he gives you his body, you take his body to Vishvakarma. Who is Vishvakarma? Architectural engineering, right? He's the architect for the devas. You take the... Okay? Yes? How to overcome material desire? Well, that's a very broad question. By being Krishna conscious, there's a broad answer. Touché. Material desire means desiring apart from Krishna. So if you recognize what a material desire is, just like recognizing how we got in the room, we know how to get out of the room, right? If we can... The mandate is to take our tendency for desire and reconvert that tendency for desire into desire for the happiness of Krishna. So we have our practices of devotion that are meant to train and purify our mind and senses, and train us once again in the disposition of loving Krishna rather than and wanting the happiness of Krishna rather than wanting happiness apart from Krishna. So the process of sadhana bhakti in the association of saintly devotees under their very munificent care and direction.
Yeah. Mother causing the reluctance in following the instructions of spiritual.
What's the cause of reluctance for following instructions of spiritual personalities? Well, there are many reasons why people are in that position, but for the group here, particularly for sadhakas, there's something that may apply that won't necessarily apply to everybody. Prabhupada used the term stubborn obstinacy, meaning there's no good reason. You just tenaciously and stubbornly hold on to an insubmissive position. Even we know with our better discretion, it's harmful for us. It causes us pain. We still hold on. Stubbornly, due to a spirit of independence, we want to enjoy, and how can I enjoy in my material way if I surrender to this spiritual personality who's giving me the best advice? I know it, but if I surrender, then where's my freedom? How can I enjoy? It's circular and irrational. There's no good reason. Why do people do things that hurt themselves? Supposing you saw a man going down the street and punching himself beating himself. And ask, my dear sir, could you tell me why you're doing that? Pow! No good reason. Pow! I think you would be happier if you didn't do that and you did something else instead. You're probably right. It doesn't make any sense. It's painful. There's things that aren't painful like that. But we're attached to things that cause us pain. It's very irrational. Irrational means it defies reason. There's no good reason. I have an aversion for Krishna, and someone who represents Krishna, I have an aversion for them because they remind me of Krishna. But we as devotees, we have attraction for Krishna, but some aversion also, that is, I want independent enjoyment and Krishna too. Or the other way around. I want enjoyment as if I'm surrendered to Krishna without Krishna. I want the kingdom of God without God. And so someone that reminds me of that position, well, I have some reluctance to surrender. It's a little bit like the question that you posed yesterday evening. I would say the answer to the next question is what to do about that reason. Is associate with some degree of faith and trust in that person and see that that person isn't going to force you to do anything. Rather, everything that they do in relation with you is done in a very loving way, and it brings the real happiness that you and everybody else wants. It brings in, first and foremost, it brings in a loving relationship, which everybody wants. There's no exception. Everybody wants to love and be loved. Everybody wants. And so when we can experience that with full confidence and trust in that loving relationship, then surrender is easy. When I think about surrender, for me the easiest thing to think about surrender is thinking about my relationship with Srila Prabhupada. I had very little personal association with him, but I could understand what it was that he came to give and how it completely changed my life, and I was completely indebted. He transformed my life. Now, I was submissive to that offer of transformation, but the potency for transforming was there, and surrendering to him was no problem. Really was no problem. I didn't have to give it much thought at all. It was just very, in other words, it was very natural. Such a caring and qualified and perfectly impeccable individual. No hesitation to surrender. And surrender everything. Not surrender a little bit. Surrender everything. And there was complete shelter in that act of surrender. Complete shelter was provided. And that's part of a loving relationship. I think that's part of what we all want. We all want to be cared for and protected along with lust. You find that it melts down independence and pride and material desire, just so strong. Yeah. We need the microphone.
If my mother pleases my brother, I get angry.
Uh-oh. The solution is she shouldn't praise your brother, right? Or whenever praising your brother, she should simultaneously praise you. There's a third option, and that is you just make your heart free from envy. And recognize that in Krishna's eyes, every living entity is very special. So when someone else, a speciality of someone is recognized, that's part of Krishna's greatness. That greatness is not the individual. The greatness is Krishna's greatness. Like Krishna does, he's memorized many shlokas. That's an opulence, and we appreciate he has that opulence. So if we appreciate that he can memorize shlokas very nicely, should that make any one of us feel bad? He's manifesting some opulence of Krishna. Or we could just go, you know, someone, the devotees that are worshipping the deities, they're very, very, very nicely decorated. Whoever made the outfit, whoever dressed the deity, very nice. Now, should that make any one of us feel bad? If we're my point is that we can go through any list of other things. But that particular opulence and any other opulence, it's but a spark of the splendor of Krishna. That someone is manifesting a spark of Krishna's splendor. It goes to the greatness of Krishna. If the spark is like this, what about the splendor of Krishna's total greatness? And each one of us has some spark of Krishna's splendor also. So it's that spiritual consciousness. Seeing like that is spiritual consciousness. If we're not in spiritual consciousness, then we won't be happy in any circumstance. We may experience some happiness if someone else is put down, because that makes me look up instead of their position down. But that's not happiness. That's a miserable condition. We should... The mode of transcendental competition is... My brother has pleased Krishna very much, therefore Krishna has decorated him with some particular ability that he's received some praise for, some recognition for. So what ability is it that Krishna has given me? Let me see what I can do, and maybe I can even get my brother's help to get me to do that particular thing which Krishna has given me some ability to do, and do it very, very nicely. Not in material competition, like so I can beat my brother. I win, he loses. Just like you might be thinking, he won, so I lost. That's material competition, win-lose. But Krishna wins. That's spiritual competition. He's done something very nicely so that Krishna is pleased. Let me see what I can do so that Krishna is also pleased. And take the help of my mother, and take the help of my brother, and take the help of all the devotees, so that I can do that very nicely. Let me take their blessings, that I can do that very nicely for Krishna. That's how a devotee thinks. Just before coming to India, I stopped in Europe for like 24 hours. I spent some time with a devotee couple from Switzerland. And we spent some time discussing, and he's about to go open a new center where there isn't anything in a very large city in Switzerland. And he asked me for advice. Any advice that you have for me? I said, yes. One thing is, make sure you get the blessings of all the devotees. Or seek the blessings of all the devotees. Because what you're going to have to do is going to require a lot of sacrifice, a lot of hard work, a lot of struggle, a lot of ordeal before anything manifests nicely. And you'll be tested through all of that. But if you have the blessings of all the devotees, you'll feel confident that the blessings of Krishna are with you. The spiritual strength beyond your own strength will be with you. So the Vaishnav mood would be, all blessings to you, my brother. May you become 10 times better at whatever you just got appreciated for, so that Krishna will be more and more glorified and pleased. And I seek your blessings, that this particular way that I have some gift from Krishna to do my service, you give your blessings to me also. And seek the blessings of all the devotees, that you can please Krishna somehow. Huh? I'm suggesting how to be humble. You recognize your position as a servant of Krishna. If the consciousness of being not humble is everything is resting upon you. That's how a materialistic person is thinking. I'm very strong, I'm very powerful, I'm very intelligent, I'm very clever, and I'm figuring out my way how to become successful and do things. And there's no Krishna in that picture. That's the lack of humility. Everything is on my own strength. And the devotee understands my own strength is very small. And what I would like to do for Krishna requires this much strength. So I have to rely upon Krishna to get this much strength. And one of the ways that I can get this much strength from Krishna is if all the devotees become very much pleased with me and they give their blessings, and then I can have so much more strength. The humility of devotee is their strength. And the absence of humility in the non-devotional mood shrinks our capacity for strength. It weakens us, spiritually and materially. The things that devotees have done in service to Krishna, they're superhuman. Superhuman. But it really, really helps to have the association of and the blessings of devotees. I'll share this. I think I can do this. Anshu Manik wouldn't mind. Glorify him a little bit. There's one devotee that graduated from the IIT Delhi program. His name is Anshu Manik. And he got a scholarship to go study abroad at a very good school. Very, very competitive school. And he went there alone. He had no association. But he had some training. But no association. In a very materialistic, competitive atmosphere. So, in the beginning, it was very difficult for him. In part, it was difficult because he was used to being the top of his class. And he went for graduate study and he was competing with very materialistic, very competent people. With a workload many times more than what he had even at IIT Delhi. They work those students like crazy. Some time passed and after getting beaten by the material energy, he decided, I think I have to become humble. And just be very, very dependent upon Krishna's mercy and my teacher and his kind direction. And so gradually a program has developed from nothing. Now there's 8 students living in a house together. Many of them just joined from his preaching and from my visits and other persons visiting there. And they have a full morning program, chant 16 rounds, and there's another student I know that's from America that is doing his graduate studies at another college, and he barely has time to chant a few rounds a day. Anshu Manik is chanting 16 rounds a day, having a full morning and full evening program, and is looking after 7 other devotees. He's like a temple president, with a workload that's double that of the other college where this other devotee is going, who's already experienced in Western, you know, the intensity of Western academics. And he's swamped. He can barely, just can chant a few rounds a day and, you know, read 800 pages a week of material and enormous pressure. And there's more pressure that Anshu has, plus all the other stuff. It's superhuman. He's become very humbled by his circumstance. And he's become very empowered because of his humility. One can do amazing, extraordinary things if one becomes humble. And if we don't learn how to be humble, we can't do zip. Because it's all depending upon our little puny strength. And our puny strength is really puny. But the fact of the matter is, we can't become humble so that we can be better. You have to become humble just to become humble. To be a humble servant of Krishna. So we all need to realize that. This is a requirement to become humble. I have to get just this whole platform of false pride, which is what hurts when your brother gets praised. It's your false pride, not your spirit soul. It's your false pride. Throw it away. Go to a river, bundle it up in a knot, toss it in the river and walk away. downstream. Can't even go back and get it. It's gone. False ego, gone. Just take the position of a humble servant of Guru and Krishna. You have some instructions that persons that care for you very much have given you. Take shelter of those instructions. Isn't it? Take shelter of those instructions and be happy. Act in that loving relationship with those that care for you very much from a spiritual platform. And don't go back to the riverside and try to find the false ego you threw away. Leave it. And you practice acting on that platform, you'll find happiness to no end. Let all the devotees become praised for their achievements in serving Krishna nicely. And your heart will be jumping with joy the more and more you hear others being appreciated. And since they're giving so much pleasure to Krishna, please give me blessings that I can do the service that I've been given and do that very nicely for Krishna so Krishna will be pleased. If you give your blessings, then I believe it will be possible. After I left Europe, that devotee wrote back and said, "This is the best advice I've been given in my whole life. I'm definitely going to do it. I'm going to go with folded hands before all the devotees in Switzerland and ask them, please give me your blessings that I can be successful for Srila Prabhupada in this service." "Just thinking about it," he said, "makes me feel so much strength." And I know I'm going to face many difficulties in trying to take up this service. I'm ready. I'll feel fortified. So trying to become humble, that's a big mission. Take blessings from all the devotees, sincerely. And become very clear what the instructions are that you've been given, and just dedicate yourself. Is it in a mood of a servant of Guru and Krishna? Dedicate yourself to fulfill those instructions. You'll feel such strength. Anything? Yeah. They're both essential. They're very akin to one another. Do we have a Bhagavad Gita? I'll read what Prabhupada says. Humility means that one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. Did you get that one? Where'd he go? Oh, there he is. Okay. This is Bhagavad Gita, page 649, chapter 13. Listen, humility means that one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. The material conception of life makes us very eager to receive honor from others. But from the point of view of a man of perfect knowledge, who knows that he is not this body, anything honor or dishonor pertaining to this body is useless. One should not be hankering after this material deception. People are very anxious to be famous for their religion, and consequently sometimes it is found that without understanding the principles of religion, one enters into some group which is not actually following religious principles and then wants to advertise himself as a religious mentor. As for actual advancement of spiritual science, one should have a test to see how far he is progressing. He can judge by these items. Prabhupada doesn't give a clear delineation between humility and pridelessness, and we could attempt to do that, but just keep it simple. They're very closely tied. If you have something that you try to be the enjoyer of, I've been saying this consistently, there is pride in that thing that you have. Some past piety or something has entitled you to acquire some facility in this world, and one becomes proud of that facility, whatever it is. Some money, some beauty, some knowledge, some strength, something. And then pride. Humility, Prabhupada, directly connects with bodily, the lack of humility connects with bodily conception of life and wanting others to give some kind of special recognition. Pride is like how we think of ourselves, and the other is how we want others to think of us. Yes.
Narration of the Arjuna story.
Vritra.
Do you know anything we can learn from this arrangement?
It's a pastime because it's the Lord's activity. But what we can learn from it is, He's already told them what we can learn from it. This is all material. You've come before the person who can give you the greatest thing. And you want 2 paisa. You're foolish. You're very foolish. That's what we can learn. We shouldn't approach the Lord for something very foolish. That something may come, but it's a foolish approach. But some persons want that kind of protection from the Lord, and He will afford that protection. But that's a very limited conception of the Lord and our relationship with Him and what real protection means. What we can learn from that is real protection means to be protected from those very material desires themselves. That's what we can learn. The Lord's greatest protection is He removes those desires from our hearts. And doesn't leave a vacuum there. He puts His lotus feet in place. Yes. The benefit of the microphone is not just so that I can hear, but so others can also hear.
Maharaj, Supreme Lord Keshe has means that he covers the body.
What? Yes, the souls aren't created. The souls are emanations from the Lord, but they're not created. that which is created is the gross and subtle body. Okay? Okay. Last question. Getting exhausted. It's one of those things. Okay. Opposing, superimposing material conceptions on something that's not material.
You know, improving our materialistic views on others.
Oh, materialistic views on others. Like, can you give an example?
When I hear something from I feel that maybe I want to be
But we're accustomed to, it's a little bit like the statement made yesterday about not feeling love for others. If we see with material conception, that's our conditioning. So what I hear you saying is from your heart you feel appreciation, but your material conceptions are creating static. And it, so the tendency with material education and material conditioning and material training is to always see things through material filters. And we hold spiritual personalities up to the examination glass of material conception. And it spoils the whole thing. I just got through addressing this very question with one devotee, and the approach, because he's accustomed to seeing things with material inspection, then I went down the road with him of material from the material inspection point of view. Look at the life of these two individuals that you've named. And very seriously scrutinize. What is it that, on the one hand, they have in their personal lives impeccable standards consistently, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year. And yet they surround themselves or allow themselves to be in the company of persons that don't. And so why would they do that? From what position are they coming to do that? From the spiritual position is evidenced by the standards that they maintain and through the compassion that they exhibit. And the result of extending themselves in that way is others, particularly those that are sincere and take shelter of that example, they come up and up and up and up and up. What is that? Is that something material or spiritual? Just by cold, analytical approach. It's spiritual. It's not material. And in their lives, they extend themselves to others like loving parents more than any parent does. Into details. With so many people that have nothing to do with their bodies, as parents are attached to someone because the child has come from their body, father, mother, this is my child. And they live amongst the devotees, just like Navayoga's son is cared for by so many mothers, just like their son. I mean, it's contagious. but it's part of the community. Where does this exist? Where is it coming from? Is it coming from a material or is it coming from a spiritual position? Yeah. It's not that the teachings are this and the personal lifestyle is that. The teachings are this and the personal lifestyle is this. Day after day after day. Just from the analysis point of view, these are spiritual personalities. And the caution is given, so now jumping ahead a little bit, Rupa Goswami gives caution in Nectar of Instruction not to see such persons in a material way. He does it in a very simple way. Supposing they have some bodily defect, one shouldn't see aha. Because by material analysis, bodily defect means bad karma means not spiritual. One should not see like that. But the business of, on the other hand, the business of the materialist is to look at the moon and examine, just see. Look at those spots on the moon. The moon is giving imperfect light because there are these spots. So rather than radiating only cooling, soothing rays, it's cooling, soothing rays, yes, but look at those spots. What is that? So the claim is not the moon has no spots. The claim is not, similarly, individuals are 100% non-different than Krishna. They're not advertising and no one else is advertising. That doesn't de-spiritualize their position. Their position is empowered position. Here's proof. Proof. In the day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month, further proof. Here in Vishakhapatnam, how many centers have there been here for how many years, and how many have this kind of participation? What does it indicate? Spiritual or material? I recently received some comments by Bhaktisiddhanta on why he was being questioned by different persons. Why don't you give the mercy of Lord Chaitanya to all the indigents? There's so many impoverished people, and why don't you go there? And Bhaktisiddhanta gave clear and cogent reasons why he chose as a strategy to do what he chose to do. Through prasadam distribution and kirtan, everyone can benefit. But he wanted to instruct the intelligent class of people. Yadyadacharati shrestas. So my comment to Krishna Smarana was, if Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur could come to Mangalarti at IIT Delhi, he would levitate. He'd go into convulsions of ecstasy to see all those students at 4 a.m. every morning. It's unprecedented, as far as I know. It's unprecedented anywhere in the history of, not only history of Krishna consciousness movement, in the history of Gaudiya Vaishnavism or any other Vaishnavism. Where does such a thing exist? And it's proliferating all over the place. Is it spiritual or material? So, give your material intelligence a little shot of spiritual electricity and spiritualize it. So you don't make the mistake of holding up the material yardstick to something that's not material. Use the spiritual yardstick. The spiritual yardstick is, just as Prabhupada has said, is the person always engaged in the service of Krishna, 24 hours a day. And it's not easy to find out what they do 24 hours a day because their life is completely public. Who lives like these devotees live? Their lives are completely public. They're grihasthas that have no privacy. Is that material? I mean, I'm whenever I go to IIT, I just every morning it just hits me like a thunderbolt. Here's a very, very perfectly chaste lady who, because of her ill health, gets up a little later than Mangalarti. She goes across the hall to take a bath with 45 men in the room next door as she crosses the hall going to the bathroom. I mean, no privacy. There's not even a curtain. And she does this every day. It's just her life. Her life is completely public. Day in and day out. Training people that don't know how to tie their shoelaces. Literally. To be pure Vaishnavas, not only Suchi, to be pure Vaishnavas. And the words that I've heard, others who have heard even her instructions, have completely changed their lives. It's not material. There's spiritual potency. It's not to say there's no spots on the moon. But look at the light that's coming. Brilliant as the sun. Changing the lives of so many people in an unprecedented way. I don't know of anything like this. I mean, this is one thing. But even this, it's their spiritual potency. Just facts. Not emotion, just facts. What to speak of the emotions? That's not unreal either. Not false or imaginary. The feelings of devotion for Krishna, what impels the persons that are doing all these things? Loving relationships are being established. They're not mundane surrogate parent relationships. There's experience of loving reciprocation with Krishna that persons are experiencing. Material or spiritual. Part of the thing, so the problem, a big part of the problem is conditioning. We're conditioned, especially those with education, are conditioned to examine things very, very meticulously with material intelligence. Material yardsticks, material standards. Don't take anybody's word for it. Pull out your material intelligence and measure everything. We're trained that way. So it's not a fault other than the system of training. It's just an offensive system of training. It's an offensive system of training. We're training up people to be asuras through modern education. Sudras and asuras. Putting it very bluntly. So we're victims of our education and training to do like that. Then some are overcoming that better than others. So that becomes personal. How much sincerity am I applying to understand and to overcome this conditioning? So a whole other dimension is our this thing of stubborn obstinacy. Our thing of, we just, if as long as we maintain independence, a spirit of independence, this false spirit, if we maintain that false spirit of independence, then there's some hope that I can be an enjoyer. independent of Krishna. But there's something standing in the way. And that's these people that represent Krishna. So just psychologically, I have to keep putting them in a box where they're relative. They're not spiritual. They're material. They're subject to my... It's not... It's another layer of conditioning. It's my own independent spirit. It's very, very practical in order to maintain my little enjoyment project in life. Material enjoyment project. But somehow a devotee, sadhakas, we have to capture this other essence, a spiritual essence, and take off into a spiritual dimension. And those that can manifest what is here have done that. Otherwise, it would not manifest. They would be struggling like the other little places that are struggling. I'm spending time with this question because it's not just you, it's a pervasive problem. More or less, but pervasive problem. And it makes it very difficult for the particular persons to address the problem because it looks like self-service. For them to say, don't look at me in a material way, look at me in a spiritual way. Looks like they're patting themselves on the back. That is the problem, but for them to directly address the problem looks like self-glorification. So it's a problem. So it's better that I address the problem. Or another than themselves addresses the problem. But the facts speak for themselves. And so, I would say at least, you know, work on three things. Facts, reminding yourself of the facts, including, you know, this is a good exercise. Keep a journal in which you can make note with your finest intelligence ways that are in fact spiritually benefiting you. Your life is being spiritually impacted. And although the changes may be incremental, they're nonetheless dramatic changes in lifestyle and outlook and happiness and what's important and priorities. There are changes that take place. Very good instructions are very kind and loving gestures, and just make note and then consider, where is it coming from? Address the material intelligence yardsticks phenomena and your own independent spirit phenomena. If I understand these things and yet I still maintain this skepticism and, you know, holding back posture, why is that? It's my independence. What's the fuel in the tank? I want to enjoy independently. Do I have an option? Yes. Use everything that I have in service to Guru and Krishna. I still have my independence if I do that. Independently, I'm choosing to do that. And at no point in time have I surrendered that independence. I'm exercising that independence wisely. I haven't lost my independence. I'm wisely using it. And now let me compare the happiness between that and this. Yeah? Yes. What's the question? To please and worship. Well, what is less pleasing is flowers and flowery words. What's more pleasing is develop Vaishnava qualities. Got it? Like this quality that we've been just discussing. A spiritual master wants the welfare of the disciple. And if the disciple is moving towards their position of welfare, the spiritual master becomes very pleased. And what is our welfare? We have a disease called material consciousness. Get rid of the material disease. We're on our position, we're moving in the trajectory of our welfare, our well-being. When the spiritual master sees that the devotee has become humble, where's our... When the spiritual master sees that the devotee is becoming humble and in that mood of humility is serving the other devotees of the Lord very happily, happy just to become the servant of the servant of the servant in a happy mood. This is very pleasing to the spiritual master. Who's asking the question? Huh? Hare Krishna. Is Padma Mataji back there? She back there? Yeah, so I'll offer some words of appreciation of your sister. Translate. I don't get the opportunity to see you so much interacting with the devotees here. But I get the opportunity to see your sister interacting with the devotees in Singapore. And from what I recall during my visits in your town, you two have very similar qualities. From what I've seen in Singapore, your sister is always in the mood of serving the devotees. She serves little Vishnupriya. She serves her mother. She serves her husband. She serves the Matajis. She's serving everybody all day long. And she's very happy just being in the position of serving. Nothing bothers her. She just loves to serve the devotees. That's very pleasing. I can say she's won my heart just from that one quality. So, any of you that although I'm here perhaps an equal number of days and off in this little room, and my health hasn't been so good. I'm sorry. But from the interacting, I would say that the mood of service that I see going on here in the temple, and from what I understand, the mood of service within the community, as much as the mood of serving the devotees, is a very strong, genuine, sincere mood. That's very pleasing. That's how to please the spiritual master. Okay? Just like this notice that Navayovana had to leave to go for his military duty elsewhere. And everybody, myself included, oh no. But very quickly I could understand this is Krishna, somehow this is Krishna's arrangement to bring the community closer together. Everyone is going to appreciate just the gift, the presence of Navayovana, what that has meant for this community. We can all understand, but you will more directly understand his presence and his wife's presence when they're gone. Appreciation will become stronger. Now all of you are going to be forced, whatever mood of cooperation is, to make a stronger mood of cooperation. And when that happens, Krishna will be very pleased. And when that breaks down, Krishna will be very displeased. And you'll all feel some pain and suffer. So try to avoid that happening. Increase the mood of cooperation and serving one another in a very genuine, heartfelt way. And that way the spiritual master and Krishna will be pleased. Okay, I'm going to end. Srila Prabhupada ki.